You are listening to an episode of The Witch Doctor, a serial fiction podcast based in the Fallen Cycle universe. Written by Equanimous Rex. Edited by James Curcio. Read by Kevin Brown. You can find more episodes at EquanimousRex.com or FallenCycle.com. And now, The Witch Doctor. Episode 2. The potato fields coughed up dust in the wake of their footsteps. Rain had not come for 2 weeks. Instead, sunshine poured down from the sky, unceasing, parching soil to barren moats. The farmers worked those fields, scraped for the root systems of native plants to discard and burn. Pulled from their telluric world into ours, the weeds' leaves quickly wilted under the sun, their roots curled. These were the competitors of crops, adapted to the whirling of nonsense seasons. They had evolved tough, thorny, and poisonous. Displaced flora at unending war with the tubers the town relied upon. From all angles, their agricultural foundations were assaulted. Hidden soil conflicts, local lineages of noxious foliage vying once more for the birthplace of their clone mothers. A quiet, long war, staged in and out of sight, beneath and above the ground. So it was for the farmers who worked those plants. The trees that grow in one season will wilt and die in another. The above-ground world was no kinder. The fields looked like cobwebbed forests. Homespun netting hung over nightshade leaves, barely supported by bowing stems. Thumb-sized beetles wriggled in the netting, legs caught up in their attempts to feed. Farmers plucked them by hand, placed them in sacks. The burlap pulsed with their multitudes. The insects would drown in those sacks, pulverized to fertilizer before the sun would set. Two old men stood straight-backed in the field, their wide-brimmed straw hats shielding them from the rays above. They dabbed at their sweat with handkerchiefs. The taller of the two leaned on a hoe, its copper head half buried in the dust, mottled with an aged patina. The shorter spat and scratched at the bulbous growth on the side of his neck, which was caked with white powder. He wiped his hand without studying it, leaving pale streaks against his dark pant leg.
"It's gonna rain," the tall man stated, moving nothing but his lips, dark eyes behind half-shut lids, surveying the activity among the crops. "I can feel it."
The other man spat and resumed working fingernails into the inflamed growth.
"I think it's gotta. Eventually."
"I can feel it."
The tall man shifted his weight off the hoe, then back onto it.
"Well," replied the other, wiping and digging. "We need it."
"Mm-hmm."
Intonation. Deep, like earthquakes.
"Shame what happened." Scratch.
"Mm-hmm."
"You figure it's gonna rain soon?"
"No doubt."
"It's a damn shame what happened."
The shorter man, finally looking down at his hands, saw red congealing in the powder on his fingertips. He stopped worrying the growth.
"Yes," replied the taller man. "It is."
"What do you think they're gonna do about it?"
"Who?"
"I don't know, the town, I suppose."
The shorter man bent over, grabbing a handful of dust, and clapped his blood-sticky hands together.
"The town,"
the taller man rumbled.
"You suppose?"
"Well, sure, we gotta take care of ourselves. Ain't the party gonna raise one hand?"
"Ain't gonna. Nope."
"You know how they say," the short man said, "about the carrot and the stick?"
"Mm-hmm."
"Well, it's feeling a whole lot like the stick end of the bargain these days."
"I'd say you were onto something there,"
the tall man said, taking his weight off the hoe. He lifted it in both hands, which tightened in anticipation of soil work. It was said a Noahite's mind lived in their hands.
"If I could ever remembered getting a carrot."
The shorter man didn't respond, didn't know how.
"Well, we better be off helping the kids,"
the tall farmer said.
"Lord knows, they're probably grab-assing by now."
He started to walk off towards the others in the distance,
The shorter man trundled after him. When the tall farmer stopped, they both did. They stared at a flurry of human activity near the riverside palisades. "Looks like they're opening up the docks," the short man said, wiping sweat from his face, casting droplets down into the dirt.
"Yeah, I think so." The tall man shouldered his hoe. "Praise the Lord Father."
"Praise him in heaven," the other replied automatically. "About time traders got back up this way."
"I think there's some dags with them too."
The shorter man started scratching at his tumor again, but said nothing.
Steel scraped hard against skin. Soap and hair flicked into a tin basin. Eyes with too much white to them stared into a scuffed mirror. Deliberate movements erasing another day's growth. Chet finished up in the mirror, wiping away scum and lather with an old shirt turned rag. Push-broom mustache well-kept with more than a speck of gray, face smooth, and the morning ritual was complete. The sun had already risen, but he wasn't in a hurry. The old town would wait, unlike the needy scraps of green they called farms. The rooster didn't crow for him like it did for the farmers. Scavers had a reputation, for laziness mostly. They were both appreciated and resented by anyone whose niche bid them rise early and work long. Most who crossed the bridge took a risk, but never stayed long, never had any kind of schedule. Chet was no exception. What he could fit into his bag often served well enough as a day's pay, enough to feed himself and four. Better than most. The walls of his bedroom were covered in scaving trophies. They sat atop shelves he built, or they hung unnervingly from bits of wire. A collection of flashlights, busted. A handful of rifles, metal actions rusted and long denied upkeep. Machine pieces of unknown origin and use. Throwing on a hempen shirt, he turned from the bedroom. He walked through the doorless frame and into a short hall. Though he was not particularly tall, the ceiling hung mere inches from the top of his head. The walls rubbed at his shoulders. The cracks between the logs were stuffed with clay and moss. Younger hands and a younger mind had built this cabin. Naive overestimations of his own skill set and the quality of native lumber.
"How many years am I still going to be bitching to myself?"
Chet wondered. His eyes were still glazed from sleep as he left the hallway behind. His kitchen was simple and as clean as water, soap, and vinegar would allow.
"Yeah, it's mustier than my ass in here," he grumbled.
The room was bereft of glass windows. He unfastened stretched oilskins and rolled them up. With clumsy fingers, he tied the oilskins in place with string. Light filled the room a little, and hot air seeped in with it. The window was on the east-facing wall, and so the skins were still wet with morning dew. Chet touched a damp fingertip to his lips and remembered they were out of water. The dew trap's yields had been minimal the past few days. The well was still spoiled. The town filters had fought hard to keep up. Everyone made sacrifices, but the crops and trees were dry and flaccid. There was plenty of water, but what ran through the river was polluted and noxious. The crops could not survive being watered with it. The townsfolk refused to drink it. The limits of the filters and the lack of rain had bottlenecked their agriculture. Only the wilder beyond seemed unaffected. Chet could see it stretching out, rising up beyond the palisades. The forests beyond the river were verdant, a jarring contrast to the muted brown existence of Noel. Shades of evergreen and chartreuse mingled beyond that invisible boundary, the leaves blurring together in a cellulose amalgam. Harried by the wind, the borders of the wilder swayed like living fire. Peeking into the other bedroom, Chet saw splayed limbs and heard the soft hum of snores. He walked out the front door, feet still bare, and grabbed the handle of a plastic bucket. His house had few direct neighbors, nestled on the far side of a sparse grove. Most of the resettled residential area was out of sight, encircled by tall grass. It grew unhindered by human hand for unknown decades before Chet arrived, and he saw no reason to get in its way. He let it go, the only exception a path he'd cut with borrowed scythe towards the old road that led into town.
When he got to the asphalt, he saw small groups walking his way, carrying buckets and water skins. They were far ahead, too small to distinguish by sight. The way their voices shrilled on the wind, however, made their identities apparent. Despite their nicknames, they didn't seem to be in a rush. Townsfolk had a habit of calling them the Busy Bees behind their backs. Wives and sisters of the Benton clan, known shit-stirrers and price gougers. He spotted Linda, eldest of the Benton patriarch's adult children. With her was Beatrice, who'd married one of the older boys. Chet couldn't recall the name of the third woman. It took Chet a moment to spy Ralph among them, the youngest brother of the batch. Ralph Benton was the only one Chet thought was worth a damn. The red-headed lad was practically still a child, but he was smart and kind, and not afraid to put in an honest day's work. Puberty had hit the boy like a train, marking him with an almost beard. Etching the transition still in motion from boy to man in the constellations of acne across his face. Meanwhile, his gangliness gave him a weaselly appearance, like a ferret stretched out and forced into bipedalism for the amusement of others. Ralph looked up from the road at Chet, and they nodded at one another. "Hey, Chet," Ralph said, adjusting so as not to lose a water skin, pausing a moment. Beatrice and the others walked a little further, then stopped. The lot of them turned with scowling faces. Linda pointed a finger at Chet.
"He's not going with you," she said, wagging her finger. "You know what my pa said. One lost boy's enough. Ralph's pa's the youngest now, so you better bet your ass he ain't going with you."
Chet cocked his head and shrugged.
"I didn't ask. I don't want him to come with me."
His reply got a grin out of Linda, and Ralph's shoulders slumped somewhat.
"We better be going," Ralph said. "I'll see you later, Chet, maybe down at the Ratskeller."
The boy said this last part quietly, so only Chet could hear. The Busy Bees whispered amongst themselves, and then Beatrice snapped her fingers. Ralph turned, noting the grimace on her face. Did as he was told. Chet watched them walk away. They'd be heading down past his cabin, to the apartments, no doubt. The Benton apartment complex, known as Sunnyside to Noahlights, was actually several buildings. Each had at least three functional floors, with dozens of rooms. It was the closest to luxury this town offered. Ralph's pa, Carl Benton, lorded over the neighborhood, and he looked after his own. Outsiders, barring a handful of families loyal to old Carl, were not welcome to live in Sunnyside. A long, dry megacorp gas station ran out of the property, which they had retrofit into a provisioner's shop. This is where Chet would often offload surplus scav, unless an opportunity arose elsewhere. If you needed something, the Bentons had it. If they didn't, they'd get it, supposing you paid the price. If you couldn't, they'd lend credit. Chet had known more than one down-on-their-luck person who'd made that devil's bargain. Rumors abounded of the Benton clan's shady dealings, but nobody looked too close at it, not in the territories. There wasn't a bigger family in all of Noel, but neither had any other family lost as many to the maw of the earth. Old Carl had been around in the first batch, same as Chet. They'd never been friendly. These days, the Bentons numbered in the double digits, no small feat, but the family seemed to have a penchant for sickness. Every 6 months or so, another one of them had dropped. They were like rapidly spawning, dying mayflies. It was hard to keep up.
"The rest of us just have the common decency to die and get it over with," Chet thought.
He peered back at the giggling women, noticing one dragging her foot behind her, the long snaking trail she left in the road dust. Bum leg, born that way. He envied them for reasons he couldn't place.
"You lot will outlive God himself."
Carl had married three wives and buried two, and was still producing children even into his winter years. But of all his direct line of those who lived, Ralph was the youngest.
"What's it been, a month now? Two?"
Chet tried to remember but couldn't.
"First Cal, then Corey."
He didn't like to think about it, but thinking about it was all he'd been doing. Time seemed to waver after the second child's disappearance. Chet had three granddaughters. They were miracles to have even made it past diapers. The idea of them getting snatched up and taken someplace.
He banished it quickly, but not quickly enough. He couldn't imagine what the parents of the lost children were going through. He never wanted to be able to imagine it. He wanted it to stay in the land of campfire stories, terrors whispered amongst friends in the clutches of night, far away from the sunlit day. He kept walking. It would be time for breakfast soon.
Hey folks, it's me, Equanimous Rex. You just listened to episode 2 of The Witch Doctor. First things first, I forgot to let you folks know what the release schedule is looking like. I've mentioned it on my blog at equanimousrex.com and on my Facebook page, but I know some of you are strict podcast listeners, there's nothing wrong with that, and forgetting to mention this schedule was a screw-up on my part. The Witch Doctor airs bi-weekly, that is once every 2 weeks on Monday. The next episode will be up on February the 4th. I have to say, I'm really enjoying how the podcast episodes are coming out, and I hope you do too. It's looking like the hiatus and reboot really was worth the wait after all. Just gotta have faith. I want to take a second and give a shout out to the very first Patreon pledger the podcast has gotten. Thank you. Like, thank you. It honestly means the world to everyone in the project, and myself especially, to see fans so engaged with the production of the podcast. Now, I'm not sure how our first patron feels about having their name released on the podcast, so I'm not going to say it, but I just want to say once again to that person, thank you immensely. If the rest of you are interested in becoming part of the Witch Doctor team via patronage, visit patreon.com/witchdoc. And as always, all the links that I'm mentioning will be in the show notes, on my website, etc., where you can get rewards for your contributions, including an enamel pin of the show's logo, they're very cool, access to hours of old audio, and more. For those new to the podcast, The Witch Doctor is part of a transmedia collaborative project called the Fallen Cycle Mythos. The mythos includes original music, books, comics, and lots of other stuff is in the works. If you like The Witch Doctor, you should really consider perusing some of our other projects. You can find all current Fallen Cycle projects at fallencycle.com. It's also where you can find issues 1 through 4 of Blackout, a comic series written by James Curcio and myself. Blackout is what happens when we can never go offline and never wake up. Bleak isolation, gonzo excess, android dreams. Nameless characters awaken to stillborn days and wrestle with the inevitability of Cthulian madness. FallenCycle.com has these projects and more. Be sure to check it out. Have a great day.